Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And my, what a week it has been. Last week, we went to air just as Hillary Clinton was collapsing in a seizure into a van. We were unable to report that to you, unfortunately. But we will talk a little bit about that as the broadcast unfolds. But first, I want to start with the relatively humbling experience of being a landlord. That's right. We're landlords. Landlords are not very respected anymore these days. Ever since the Occupy Wall Street / Black Lives Matter / Barry Ho administration. And so we're going to get out of the landlord business. No. We're not going to get out of the landlord business? No, we are. We're going to get out of the landlord business in this particular area with this particular property. Because here's the thing. As the marijuana laws become more and more liberalized here in Colorado, it's just hard to find someone to rent from you who's not on drugs. And so we got to look for a neighborhood. I don't know what to do. I think we'll have to buy our next property in Kansas, perhaps. But I can tell you there are few experiences more tedious and more humbling than picking up cigarette butts and dog poop from gravel around a suburban home. Now, I had made a deal with this previous tenant that he would not smoke in the house, which he did not. We're very happy about that. He did not smoke cigarettes in the house. But he never threw a single cigarette butt into an ashtray or a garbage can either. And he threw them all in the gravel around the house. And then the dog poop. Do I want to even get into the dog poop? Well, I had made the arrangement with this fellow. No cigarette smoking in the house. I wish I could have talked to his dog about pooping in the house. But I hadn't anticipated that that would be an issue. Because, you know, human dignity being what it is, you would think that you would not allow a massive buildup of animal feces in the room where you sleep. Oh, yeah. Well, there was so many different kinds of fecal matter that had to be. We probably have to leave it there. We don't want to go any further than that. They did make some effort to clean the place, and it didn't stink, and so. Yeah, if forensic files went into that house with the luminol, there was one stain in the bathroom. It looked like someone had bled out in the corner of a bathroom. We wanted it sprayed for luminol, but, well, we didn't have any luminol. So we didn't. So that's what's going on with that. I wish I could have talked to that dog, but I was not able to communicate with the dog, and apparently I should have mentioned that to the owner. Oh, don't let the dog poop in the house. And if the dog does poop in the house, clean it up. Right? Well, that was there was so many biological fluids, just bodily fluids from animals, humans. Anyway, what a scene it was. But, hey, am I experiencing some kind of mental conniption? Or did I actually see a commercial that tonight 60 Minutes is going to be on a nuclear sub? What is 60 Minutes doing on a nuclear sub with cameras making a TV show? Is anything classified anymore? Is that how they're going to cover for Hillary? Just nothing's classified anymore. Just bring your cameras onto our nuclear subs. We'll show you all of our best stuff. I just saw the commercial. I almost fell out of my chair. 60 Minutes is going to be on a nuclear submarine. Yeah. Okay. No, it's real. It is real. All right. Anyway, we have three bombs discovered in New Jersey, one bomb detonated in Manhattan. The Islamic State is celebrating. The mighty warriors of Allah! And they are on the march. And in Minneapolis, for crying out loud, a young Somali refugee named Dahir stabbed eight people in a St. Cloud mall. St. Cloud, Minnesota, made references to Allah and asked one of the victims if they were a Muslim as he was stabbing people. Thankfully, there still are men in America. An off-duty police officer fatally shot the man, this poor Somali refugee, who no doubt George Bush Sr. put the wheels in motion to bring this person here. And, well, there we are. So the war continues. That was from, by the way, that was from CBS in Minnesota, where we have a stabbing at a mall. And it's, well, do you feel the tension, America? I mean, when I'm in public areas anymore, I mean, I'm not paranoid, but I'm packing and I'm paying attention to what's going on. I don't want to take my family to the mall. I don't know when the next Somali refugee is going to detonate. But maybe we shouldn't be worried about it. Maybe there's nothing to worry about. Because I have a story here from the Mirror in London where a Bank of America, Bank of America's Merrill Lynch, an analyst there, a group of analysts actually, issued a report making the claim that there is a 50% chance that our whole world is just a computer simulation. These are analysts for Merrill Lynch, Bank of America. They cite comments by top scientists, astrophysicists, and philosophers.
Is all the financial
maybe my mortgage is just a simulation. Send a note over to Bank of America, ask their opinion on that. Let's see, they talk about Elon Musk. He says he's almost certain our world is run by artificial intelligence developed by a future civilization. The guy's a billionaire, and he's looking for little green men. Anyway, the bank analyst report said, quote, many scientists, philosophers, and business leaders believe there is a 20 to 50% probability that humans are already living in a computer-simulated virtual world. Yes. In April 2016, researchers gathered at the American Museum of Natural History to debate this notion. So some top-flight scientists, degreed people, I'm talking people with PhDs, got together to debate whether or not this is all just a computer simulation. Part of the theory of the computer simulation world includes reasoning that if we are living in a futuristic virtual reality, hold on to your hats, you ready? If we are living in a virtual reality world, we will never know about it. How about that? So does this even matter? Why should we debate this? If we're never going to know about it. A note in the report added, quote, it is conceivable that with advancements in artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and computing power, members of future civilizations could have decided to run a simulation of their ancestors. And guess what? That's us. Yes. You know, this is, by the way, this is from the Science, really? File. I'll tell you what I think of this. This is the godless, the humanists, the naturalists, the big bangers, the old earthers struggling with the fact that deep down they know there is a creator. They know. They know there's a creator, but without God, you will drive yourself mad. You'll become a mad scientist. Now they're reaching out to future civilizations who were their ancestors. It's a simulation because we know something must be directing all of this. But no room for a living God who might hold them responsible for their deeds and their thoughts and their actions. No, they don't leave any room for him, but there is room for the idea that this is all virtual reality. Uh-huh. Okay. So there's your top-notch researchers, scientists, billionaires, cultural and thought leaders, technological leaders, struggling with the knowledge deep down in their black little hearts that there must be a creator. Yes, yes, yes. All right. So let's move from the science, really, file to, let's see, what should this be for? I think I'm going to put this in the war file because I think there is a confluence of influence that is occurring. Indeed. Yes, that's what I believe. Uh-huh. And this story was sent in to me by a loyal listener, Mr. Patrick, from, I don't know where Patrick is from. Maybe he lives in a virtual reality simulation somewhere. Yes, loyal listener Patrick sent me this story, and this is probably the most ironic story of the decade. From WorldNet Daily, a Houston leader of the Black Lives Matter movement was robbed at gunpoint last Wednesday by a black assailant, coincidentally. Yeah. The armed man stole the Black Lives Matter leader's wallet and his phone and ran away. Yes, this leader of the Houston Black Lives Matter movement, he's going to college, you see, because he's a fine, upstanding young American. He's going to improve himself and save the country. Well, he was near the University of Houston campus area, and students there report that there have been other robberies in the area, and the leader of the Houston Black Lives Matter movement, whose name I will not mention, he issued a statement saying, quote, "These crimes are becoming a pattern. I hope they would take a bigger stance to put more security over here, because you have a lot of people walking back and forth to class." So it sounds to me, maybe, unless this is a virtual reality simulation, that the leader of the Houston Black Lives Matter movement is asking for more police on his campus. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Patrick, for the height of irony. If you look up irony in Wikipedia, they should link to this story. That's just too much. That's just too much. But on a serious note, ladies and gentlemen, there's a reason that the young man who was assaulted near the University of Houston campus is not going to be able to get his wish for more police to protect him from criminals. And it's because people involved in various organizations funded by George Soros, like the Black Lives Matter movement, have caused there to be an environment of open warfare against the police. Listen to this. This is from Philly.com. I was in Philadelphia last week. I'll get to that after this, though. I was in Philadelphia last week. My first time I've ever been to Philadelphia. Last week, a gunman ambushed a Philadelphia police sergeant on Friday night. He fired more than a dozen shots. Then he shot four civilians and a University of Pennsylvania police officer during his flight when he was finally cornered and taken down by police. I believe he was shot to death. The police commissioner... And now listen to this. I don't understand this. The police commissioner called the chain of events a completely bizarre situation. Really? Is that bizarre? Completely bizarre? Because it seems to me that this happens more and more often, that it's anything but bizarre. It's almost become routine. Police have a conflict, and the the suspected criminal chooses, instead of running, stopping, freezing, or putting his hands up, he chooses to shoot the police. So for the police commissioner to say this is completely bizarre, I don't know where the police commissioner lives. After shooting a police sergeant, the suspect shot a security guard, a patron at a bar, two people inside of a vehicle. One woman was later pronounced dead, and one man, at last we knew, remains in critical condition. Now listen to this. The same police commissioner in Philadelphia says this, quote, "We believe this is isolated to this individual." Excuse me? What did you say? This is isolated to this individual? Are you living on the planet Earth? Are you living in a simulated virtual reality world? If an epidemiologist were to look at the last 2 years of American history as it relates to police shootings, and I'm talking about police being shot or shot at, any epidemiologist worth his salt would identify this as a syndrome. This is not at all isolated. There is a cultural environment that is pushing, that is facilitating, that is encouraging this type of behavior. This is isolated to this individual. This police commissioner, Richard Ross, he should be fired immediately. Philadelphia police officers, fine officers in Philly, killed the suspect, shot him dead. And effective immediately, officers will be patrolling in pairs, officially now, in Philadelphia. And so whether you're in Philadelphia or Houston or Dallas or Denver or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Miami or New York, you're not going to get more protection from the police, because the folks who have lit the fire under this cauldron that is burning, that is encouraging this attack on the police, they themselves have said, "We don't want the police." And now they're in a position where they are not going to get them. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you on board. So an isolated incident, says the police commissioner in Philadelphia. So we go to NBC in Dallas-Fort Worth, where two Texas police were shot while responding to a call. The man who fired on the police was then killed when officers returned fire. Two police officers are in the hospital. Another apparent suicide by cop. Suicide by cop. This is where a criminal decides that he's going to take out the police along with himself. And were it not for the current environment, this just wouldn't be happening as often as it is. And there is a connection. This is a syndrome that should be identified, and it should be dealt with by the governing officials, the authorities, whose first responsibility, by the way, what is the first responsibility of governing officials? Is to preserve the lives and property of the citizens. That's the very first responsibility. The very first right that our founding fathers delineated in the Declaration of Independence was the right to life. And that declaration imbues the government with a responsibility to preserve life. But we've gotten a bit far afield from the thoughts, the thought processes that led to the American Declaration of Independence. We've gotten away from that. And I'm going to blame the lawyers primarily. Well, maybe I'll blame the preachers first. But I'm going to read this next story, and if I get through this without swearing, that will be almost a miracle. From KTLA, they are reporting that a six-year-old girl who was abducted from her home last Wednesday night has been found alive but chained to a tree in New Hanover County, North Carolina. Stephanie Leneth Lopez Castro was found last Thursday morning about 2 miles from where she was taken. This is a six-year-old little girl. Douglas Edwards, 46 years old, has been taken into custody. Douglas Edwards is listed on the North Carolina Sex Offender Registry. He was convicted in 1996 of first-degree sexual offense against a minor. The victim was 6 years old at the time. So who decided that in a nation where the very first obligation of the government delineated by our founders was the preservation of innocent life, when was it decided that we would have a catch-and-release program with child molesters? When will we learn? Will we learn? This is a daily story. The only thing that made this story stand out was the fact that this little girl was chained to a tree. So that gave it some novelty and some legs in the media. Otherwise, you wouldn't ever hear about this. Because this happens every day in countless cities across America. Registered sex offenders molest and murder children. And in my opinion, child molestation is tantamount to murder. But somewhere along the line, and I don't... Now, if we all look back, let's take the issue of child killing. We all know when child killing was legalized. First in Mississippi in 1966, only for the disabled. Supposedly the hard cases, right? Then in Colorado, 68, California, several other states. But then in 1973, January, the U.S. Supreme Court issued an opinion that the right to privacy gives anyone the right to kill innocent children. And so we can all look back and we can see that this was the day, here's the line of demarcation, when child killing was supposedly legalized throughout America. And I know I have friends who say, don't say that it made it legal because it's not really a law. And I understand all that. But the Roe versus Wade opinion has facilitated the murder of nearly 60 million people. So to say that it has not at least been treated as if it has the force of law is to be naive and to not admit reality. So 1974, abortion legalized nationwide. But when, can I ask, when was it decided that child molesters would be allowed, number one, to even live? Who decided that? And number two, that they would ever be released back amongst us, that they would live amongst us, that they would be registered 3 doors down in the suburbs. When was that decided? Because it has been decided. And here's the evidence of it right here. This is the fruit of that policy. The fruit of that policy is one 46-year-old Douglas Edwards. So this happens every day. When will we learn? Perhaps we are no longer capable of learning. Could it be that the average American has slipped so far afield of personal responsibility that we're no longer even able to judge a case like, well, the case in 1996 that should have been judged? Sexual offense against a minor, that is a death penalty offense. And I don't want to live in a country where that is not a death penalty offense. Now, unfortunately, I can't find any other country to go to where I can be free and raise my family in the fear and admonition of the Lord. So I did what I could do and just got my family out of the suburbs, got my children out of the suburbs where the child molesters surround your home like a minefield. You put your address into the sex offender registry, and it's terrifying if you have young girls. It's terrifying. So I at least got out where I got a few miles in between me and the freaks and the weirdos and the perverts that the lawyers have decided are allowed to live amongst us. But perhaps our governing officials are no longer capable of learning right from wrong. And perhaps the governed, since in theory at least, America, the politicians, they receive their authority from the governed, perhaps the governed are not capable of learning that any longer. And so we are doomed to live with perverts who would kidnap a six-year-old girl and chain her to a tree. And then you find out this guy did the same thing 20 years ago. And how is he even living and breathing? I want to strangle this. I want to put my hands right around his neck myself. I'll tell you what. All right. See, I didn't swear. Well, I believe that because the governing authorities have decided to tolerate, the most heinous of crimes. Forget the fact that last week we allowed a man who shot the President of the United States out of the mental institution to live as a free man. So we are inculcating in the youth and the adults for that matter, but the adults, whatever, the youth, at least the kids are salvageable, hopefully. But we are inculcating in them a lack of respect for authority. Because there are no real consequences. If you assault a six-year-old child, you should be executed. And is that extreme to say that? Because if you think that's extreme, you are part of the problem. And you probably don't have any kids. That's not extreme. That's pure common sense. That's the foundation of a civil society, is that you cannot do. There are certain crimes which we will not tolerate. You will not be allowed to return and live amongst us. You will be dispatched to Judgment Day. But we don't have that anymore. And it's driving the country to a collective place of insanity. Now, let's go to the domestic tranquility file, where we will see that the death penalty still does exist in the United States. We'll go to Anderson County, South Carolina, where WYFF Channel 4 reports that a 17-year-old young man was fatally shot by a homeowner after he and two others broke into the homeowner's house last Thursday morning. The young man broke into the house, went to the back of the home, and was shot through the bedroom door by the homeowner. Police are investigating the case as a home invasion. So, in my opinion, breaking into someone's house late at night, that's a death penalty offense. Yes, because you scare people. They could have a heart attack. They could die. You can't break into somebody's house late at night, early in the morning when it's dark outside. And you should, if you're caught doing that, well, you should be arrested and tried. And if you're convicted, you should be executed. Now, this young man, well, he was executed, or at least he was killed. So there still are cases where the death penalty is utilized in America, just not in open court. But sadly, the fact is that if the death penalty had been utilized properly in open court during the 17 years of this young man's life, there's a really good chance he may never have thought to invade someone's home. That wouldn't have been an option on his radar, because he would have been terrified knowing that he could receive the death penalty. But instead, he wandered into the house late at night with no respect for authority and no fear of punishment. And what did he end up getting? Well, he ended up getting the death penalty. Never ends. The pain that's on my death touch, I'm preventing enough to get something from God to God. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. And so I want to transition from, well, just the daily insanity, the confluence of influence that is leading us all into dementia. We'll all be sitting alongside Hillary Clinton before long. I want to change gears because, well, there still is humanity. There still is decent people exercising just good common sense. We'll go to the personhood file. We'll talk about Clarissa Shields. Are you familiar with this young lady? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. And she did not know. Well, she made history at the Rio Olympics. So she is an Olympian. She is the first U.S. boxer to win back-to-back gold medals at the Olympic Games. Now, here at the McBurney compound, we're not big fans of female boxing. We're not big fans of boxing. Not big fans of UFC. We're just not really entertained by watching two people beat each other senseless until one falls over bleeding and gives up. Somewhere along the line in my life and my career, that ceased to be entertaining to me. But if you like it, that's fine. I understand. That's great. I used to be a huge boxing fan. I used to watch Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, Muhammad Ali. Yep. So that's fine. And that's great. And I'm happy for Clarissa Shields that she won back-to-back gold medals at the Olympics. And I'm just happy that she's just a decent human being. On Monday, she was being interviewed on Good Morning America. Good Morning America, which is the crucible of the decline and fall of Western civilization every morning. You can see it documented right there on Good Morning America. She credited God for her success. She said the name of God on Good Morning America, which in and of itself means that she's brave. Or maybe she's just a normal person. She didn't realize how much that would offend the staff, the producers, everyone associated, the makeup artist, everyone. Flip out when they hear the name of God. Well, the interviewer on Good Morning America, which I must confess I did not watch, because I do not watch the Good Morning America or anything like that. And I can't believe anybody still does. I bet you everyone who watches that show is at least 75 years old. Right? They got their bottle of Geritol next to them. Right? They're checking out the commercials between the competing adult diaper companies. Watching Good Morning America. Anyway, the interviewer had mentioned that Clarissa Shields had a difficult childhood. But apparently that's as far as it went on Good Morning America, because as soon as she mentioned God, everybody got really uncomfortable. So that was kind of the end of things. But Newsbusters is reporting a little bit more about Clarissa Shields. She grew up in Flint, Michigan, with a father in jail and her mother with drug problems. Her mother's male acquaintances abused her. We'll just leave it at that. Her family relied on food stamps that her mother sold for drugs. And one day her cousin came to her begging her for $500 so that she could get an abortion. And this is not very long ago. This is 2014. As Clarissa is preparing for the 2016 Olympics, her cousin comes to her and says, "I need $500. I have to get an abortion." Well, Shields told her, "I don't believe in abortion, and I will adopt the baby." Excuse me. She said, "I will adopt the baby and take it as my own." Clarissa herself, a mere teenager at the time, 19 years old. So her cousin went out and she didn't take her up on it right away. The cousin went out and raised $400 in cash Because you see, at Planned Parenthood, they care so much about women's rights, and especially a woman's right to choose, that they insist on $500 in cash up front. That's how much they care. So Clarissa's cousin goes out, raises $400 in cash, comes back to Clarissa and says, "Can I get $100? That's all I need to get this abortion." And Clarissa said, "No, I will not help you, and I want to adopt your baby." And in fact, the cousin had the baby. Clarissa adopted the baby, and the baby stayed with her for about 8 months before the mother came back into her right mind and said, "I want my baby." And Clarissa gave her back her baby. She saved this baby's life. Yeah. She was training with the baby in the little carrier. She would set the carrier down and then go shadow box for an hour and a half in front of the baby. Baby liked it, found it entertaining, laughed, giggled. So now, Clarissa Shields has a niece. Is that what it would be? A cousin has a baby? No. Second cousin. Anyway, there's a baby. And the mom, you know, once the mom got past this idea that she'd been brainwashed with, that she had to kill this baby, once the mom starts looking at Clarissa and seeing the relationship, the mom's like, "I want that baby." So now the family has another generation, okay? Because this young lady, and what she did, this isn't heroic. I mean, this isn't like Oscar Schindler. This is just a decent human being doing what a normal, decent human being would do. Telling a family member, "No, don't kill your child. Don't kill your child. I'll help. I'll adopt the baby." I've told 10,000 women. Now, that's probably an exaggeration. I'll bet you, when I used to go to the abortion clinic back in the 90s and the early 2000s, I would ask 5 or 6 women every week. I would say, "I will adopt your baby. Stop. Come on out of there. I will adopt your baby." None of them took me up on it. Now, I did have one young lady who changed her mind, though, and I helped her. I rented her a place and just helped her with her bills, and now she has a baby. And then that would have been 2007, 6, 7. How old is that kid now? That kid's 10 years old now. Anyways, and it's not heroic. It's just a decent, you find out somebody's going to kill someone else. You just say, "Hey, no, is there any way I can help?" For crying out loud. Anyway, our hat tip goes to Clarissa Shields for just being a decent human being and helping us to realize that all is not lost. And everyone hasn't lost their mind. It's only the people in the media and the government and the judicial system. They've all lost their mind. Oh, and the universities. And Hollywood. They're all completely insane. And Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Elon Musk, researchers, they're all crazy. But we're not. There's a lot of us left who are not insane. Okay? We are still in our right mind. Unlike one Hillary Rodham Clinton. We're going to get to Hillary now. Well, what's my time? Where am I at here? Okay. I have time. Yes, let's get to Hillary and her the politics file. The doctor says Hillary has bacterial pneumonia. That's why she's been coughing for like 5 months. And that's why she had a seizure. Now, my pastor reported on this incident on Monday on his radio show. Pastor Bob Enyart said that the video of Hillary Clinton trying to walk, which it's obvious she wanted to walk to that van, to prevent exactly what happened, to prevent people from thinking that she's on the verge of collapsing and dying at any moment. So you could tell she wanted to take those 2 or 3 steps to get in that van, and she couldn't get it. She couldn't do it. In fact, the third step, she took a header, like, right? Now, I hate Hillary Clinton so much that I have to laugh. But my pastor pointed out that the video was hard to watch. And it's true. The first time I watched it, I actually felt pity for Hillary Clinton. I mean, just a human, you know, just watching somebody go through that was hard to watch. But then you watched it. It was like the Zapruder film. I mean, they just kept looping it and looping it and looping it. And so it got easier and easier to watch. And then I got to thinking, well, here, let me do this story first. And then I'll tell you what I got to thinking about. And then maybe I'll get to Philly, because I have some comments about Philly. I was surprised at what I did in Philly. I'll get to that later if I don't forget. Let's see. Hillary's doctor wrote a letter. Lisa Bardak says Clinton was being treated for a mild non-contagious bacterial pneumonia is what it was. After the nominee appeared to collapse. Well, she didn't appear to collapse. She collapsed. And if those two people hadn't been holding onto her arms, she'd have a fresh, she probably would have split her forehead open on the side of that truck. Appeared to collapse and leave abruptly. Yeah. Well, she didn't appear to leave abruptly. She left abruptly. It was a 9/11 commemoration at ground zero, okay? There was no perception issues. And that's the problem for Hillary. There's really no way to wiggle out of this one. You couldn't make it through the ceremony and you collapsed. And it looks, to anyone who was paying attention, it looks like you had a seizure is what it looked like. And it was hard to watch the first time. Anyway, this Breitbart reports that the mild pneumonia does not explain months of coughing, nor the reported confusion, strange head movements, episodes of apparent inattention, sudden falls, her ankles are swelling, she has acne and bad breath. Just, she got all these problems, right? You can't say that she caught pneumonia a week and a half ago, for crying out loud. Nobody's going to buy that. They say her dystonic movements, freeze falls, wooden movements, a lack of protective reflexes in multiple falls, abnormal eye movements, vocalizations, difficulty swallowing, coughing spasms. Which, I'm sorry to laugh, but you have to understand how much I hate this woman and how much personal animosity I have against her for advocating socialism that has destroyed millions of people and child killing that has resulted in 20 million people killed just since she got active in politics. Maybe 30 million. Innocent people murdered. So I hate her with a righteous, godly hatred, okay? Anyway, they say that these strongly suggest a neurodegenerative movement disorder, perhaps Parkinson's, which is a terminal illness that before death causes dementia. Now, Hillary Clinton is so evil that she deserves to face death utterly by surprise, with no warning. Just literally, boom, she's standing before the living God and it's judgment day. That's what she deserves. She deserves to find herself suddenly and unexpectedly standing before God without even having had an inkling to reconsider the wickedness that she has advocated and carried out in her lifetime. That's what she deserves. But what I saw in that video last Sunday is that God is merciful. And that God, even though Hillary Clinton hates Jesus Christ, hates the Creator God, and actively fights against them every day of her life with every breath, with every cough, with every hack, with every tremor that goes through her body. She is actively working against Jesus Christ. Yet he is being merciful to her because he has given her now a warning. I think Hillary knows she's sick. She knows really well that she's sick. And she knows very well that she may not have long to live. And if she has a disease, I don't know what she has, not her doctor. But if she has a neurodegenerative disease, it's going to be a long, slow path into the grave for Hillary Clinton. And she will be given the opportunity with every hack and every tremor and every fall and every dizzy spell to consider her own mortality. So this is God being merciful to Hillary Clinton, even though she has shown no mercy to his children. He is still going to be merciful for her. the best thing that could happen to Hillary Clinton is that she would find herself on her deathbed and her doctors are telling her, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it, Hill. Because then, perhaps, she would be humbled by her own mortality and she would repent. And then all of the wickedness and the evil that she did in the world, it would still have hurt a lot of people. There are a lot of people who have been hurt by Hillary Clinton and what she's done and what she's advocated. But Hillary herself could be saved. It is possible. So the best place for Hillary Clinton, if, at least from a theological perspective, is on her deathbed. She's got the I'm your host, Doug McBurney's The Weekly Worldview. Welcome back. I don't want that to be construed as any type of threat against Hillary Clinton. And I don't wish her ill. But if she has found herself to be ill, perhaps she could consider that a merciful God is giving her an opportunity to confront her tremendous wickedness and give her an opportunity to repent. Let's move on now into the politics file. Ladies and gentlemen, the first female soldier has participated in the Army's initial training for the Green Berets. Yes. The Green Berets and negligees. It's upon us. Well, almost. She participated side by side with the men in the dirt and the heat and the sweat and the blood and the tears, and she has failed to complete the course. She has dropped out. Unfortunately, she was not able to hang with the big boys at the Green Berets. Now, but hey, 30% of the male trainees, they drop out. So she dropped out. Defense Secretary, you'll remember, Ashton Carter, opened all combat jobs to women back in December. So far, no woman has achieved the qualification to become an Army Ranger or a Green Beret or a Navy SEAL or a Marine Corps infantry officer or even an Air Force parajumper. Even the Air Force, they can't make it? Seriously? Now, I'm just kidding. I love my brothers in the Air Force. I'm just kidding. Anyway, you know, this is kind of sad for this lady. I mean, I'm trying to be more positive. See, there was a time when I would just dismiss this woman and say that, look, women just shouldn't be able to do, they shouldn't even have a desire to go roll around in the mud and the dirt and kill other people. They should have more maternal instincts. There was a time when I would have said that. And actually, I just said that. So, but I want to be more understanding and less negative in my life. So this is similar to, you know, granting unqualified students scholarships to Ivy League schools. You know, they take some kid out of Detroit and give him a scholarship so that they can meet a quota over at Harvard, say. This kid's completely unprepared. There's no way this kid is going to be able to meet the academic standards of Harvard, but they want to check off a box and say that they're inclusive and multicultural and they're not sexist, racist, or homophobes, or bigots, or Islamophobes, any of that stuff. And so this is a similar situation. You put a woman, and this woman probably believed that she could do this, which is ludicrous. I mean, most of the men you meet, they can't do this. So to tell this girl that she can do this is, I mean, it's to set her up for the destruction of her self-esteem. And that's bad. I mean, that When your self-esteem is decimated in your youth, that can affect the rest of your life. It can affect your career. It's horrible. But you know what? The transsexualists are willing to destroy people in their quest to blot out God's order from their lives and from the public square. God said he created man and woman, male and female, at the beginning of the creation, and that the male would be the head over the female, and the female would be a helper. Oh, they hate that. And they don't care if it destroys this woman's heart and soul. They don't care. Yes, I said the transsexualists. So now that the homos have, I don't know what else they can do. I suppose they can take over all the churches. I guess that's the next thing the homos will ask for. Now that they've got marriage, they want the pulpits of every church in America. They're going to force themselves in. But they've gotten pretty much all they want. And so now we go on to the next. What's the next thing after homosexuality? And now it's the transsexualists. They want to erase all the barriers. They want to erase any idea that there are two sexes. And they don't care how many people get killed, how many people get destroyed. They don't care how many tears are shed. They don't care who they hurt. They are out to blot out anything that would give anyone the idea that there's a God looking down upon all of this, who created all of this. And, well, there you go. I'm going to move on to more politics, I suppose. A story from the Daily Caller. John Kerry's State Department funneled over $9 million through the Peace Corps to a nonprofit foundation started and run by Secretary of State John Kerry's daughter. So she has a nonprofit. He gives a bunch of money to the Peace Corps, and then just by chance, they give all that money to his daughter's foundation. Let's see. In 2014, the young Kerry, the young Miss Kerry, drew a $140,000 salary from said foundation for reporting to work for 30 brutal hours a week. Oh, and then there was travel and expenses. 30 hard work. I mean, she works harder than when she leaves at the end of the day, the sweat's pouring off, her sleeves are rolled up. I mean, after all, she's trying to save the world. Her group is called Seed Global Health. And they are, what are they trying to do? They are, well, it doesn't really say what they're trying to do, but they're trying to do good. And they don't mind doing very well indeed while they're doing good. So there was the $140K salary, travel expenses for her and her entourage. Of course, she needs help. Saving the world's not easy. Anyway, this is just old-fashioned. This harkens back to another time when our leaders weren't outright traitors. It's just old-fashioned patronage job for a dim-witted relative who probably couldn't get hired by anyone else. That's all it is, just old-fashioned graft. But, hey, the amount of money involved has become embarrassingly large, John. Could you try to be a little more discreet, John? I mean, $9 million, all of it to your daughter. We have some. Anyway. I mean, after all, you call yourself a diplomat, Mr. Kerry. Could you be a little bit more discreet about the money that you're throwing to your daughter's foundation? I mean, it just looks bad. Now, speaking of foundations who are hell-bent on saving the world, let's go to the Clinton Global Initiative. The Clinton Foundation's 2014 budget was massive. $90 million budget. Yeah, out to save the world. 5.7% of that went to actual grants to charities. The rest of it, well, salaries, compensation, employee benefits. Believe it or not, according to their tax return, over $50 million was marked as, quote, other expenses. So I don't know about you. I run a company. It's a small company. We don't have a $90 million budget. But our accountant would flip out if more than half of the money we just said, that's other, you know, just whatever. It's just other expenses we incurred. Anyway, this could not happen at a publicly held company. Somebody would go to jail. more than half your money is in the other, that's like the generic column. Anyway. But don't worry, folks. The IRS has launched an investigation into the Clinton Foundation. The IRS has launched a virtual reality simulation investigation into the Clinton Foundation because the Clintons can never go to jail or be accused of a crime. They've been allowed to get away with so much that it would embarrass far too many people to actually try to hold them to account now. It's just like Barack Obama. Listen to this. You are not going to believe this. The Treasury Department, Barry Ho's Treasury Department, has acknowledged that on at least two occasions, the United States did make wire payments to the Iranian government, payments via wire transfer. Remember, Barry came out, well, we had to give him the $400 million in cash because, well, we don't have a banking relationship with Iran. It's not like we could just wire the money to them. He said that, right? You all remember. I'm not insane, right? I'm not in a virtual reality simulation. No, that's what he said. Well, now the Treasury Department says that back in, let's see here, in July 2015, they wired $848,000 to settle a claim with Iran. And then in April 2016, they wired the Iranians $9 million to help the Iranians remove heavy water from their nuclear program. Did it all by wire transfer. And the July 2015, the 800 grand, that wire transfer was made while the full weight of sanctions against Iran were still intact. So now we know that he lied to us. He sent him almost $2 billion in cash. He sent nearly $2 billion in cash to our sworn enemies just in the last year. Okay, so what? So nothing. Nothing will happen. That's it. Nothing. Doesn't matter. Well, the president just basically paid a ransom for hostages and gave all this cash that we'll never be able to trace. We don't know where it went. Now, there's a good chance that a good 20-30% of it went right back to Barack and Michelle. And then a good chunk went to John Kerry and his daughter and their foundation. Don't ever underestimate the idea that these people are all about stealing as much money as possible while they're in office. And any time governing officials can have a chance to deal with cash, they're skimming off as much as they possibly can. I haven't heard a peep from anyone about this. The story just broke. When did this story break? Well, 2 days ago on Politico. When Republicans were asked if Barack Obama would face any legal or political pressure regarding his bald-faced lie about an apparently treasonous act, Republican leaders insisted that Mr. Obama's party would pay the price in the November elections. So apparently that's it. Is that how we settle legal violations now amongst our political class? They pay only at the ballot box. There was a time when somebody would go to prison for this. There was a time someone would at least be arrested. There would be hearings. But no. Nope, the Republicans are happy to just win the election. That way they can get their hands on some of that cash that's going around up there. Some of their dim-witted nephews can start foundations and they can start funneling the grants to them. I mean, that's where we are. All right, and then there's the Syria debacle. I'm over time a little bit, but I got to finish this. There's a new video that came out this past week that shows U.S. forces basically running away from U.S.-backed Syrian rebels. Yeah, the new video, according to the Telegraph, is the first evidence of U.S. special forces cooperating with Turkish troops in their battle against the Islamic State. The incident illustrates, listen to this, the complex web of alliances and enmities in Syria, where many of America's allies are fighting each other. And some rebel groups that receive U.S. support still harbor strong anti-American sentiments. The footage shows a crowd of rebel fighters, ostensibly allied with the U.S. and Turkey, screaming anti-American chants as a column of pickup trucks carrying U.S. commandos drives away from them. These Islamic Muslim fanatics are screaming, "Christians and Americans have no place among us. They want to wage war, a crusader war, to occupy Syria. The collaborators of America are dogs and pigs." These are our allies as they drive our troops from their midst. And then they go into, I'll post this article. It's unbelievable that we are in Syria supporting Islamists against Assad while they fight Islamists and we say we're fighting ISIS. It's complete and utter insanity. It's almost as if Barack Obama wants to set the world up to just explode right as he's leaving office. It's almost as if. Listen to this from the war file. A U.S. coalition airstrike killed dozens of Syrian soldiers this past week. Damascus and Moscow put the death toll of Syrian soldiers at 62. The raid allowed the Islamic State to gain ground near an air base. This base has been under siege since 2012 and is involved in clashes between Islamic State and forces loyal to Assad. So what did we do? We bombed the Syrians, and then the Islamic State took the ground. Now, the Pentagon has admitted that U.S. pilots may have hit Assad's forces, but they said they believe they were striking Islamic State positions. And we want to give our condolences to all the Syrians we just blew off the map. But we're just trying to stabilize the Middle East, is what we're trying to do here. The head of Fatah al-Sham Front, that's the former al-Nusra Front, which is a known Islamic fanatical Islamist terrorist group, said that they're not going to let the siege of Aleppo to continue. And one of their spokesmen, named Mohammed, surprisingly enough, says negotiations are underway for all of the anti-Assad regime groups to band together in a single organization. At which point I would say, okay, Mohammed, call me back when that happens. And then maybe we can talk about Assad, but not Barack Obama. He's right in there. He's just right in there. All right. I'm almost out of time. Over in Belgium, the government of Belgium has officially facilitated the euthanization of a minor child. They call it a mercy killing. The head of the Federal Euthanasia Commission gave no details, but said it was a child with a terminal illness. Don't ask any more questions. There is nothing more you need to know. We know what we are doing, and the child was very sick. Belgium has been the only country in the world that allows children of any age, as long as they are able to make a rational decision, to choose to end their suffering, is how the French press agency. A request for euthanasia must be made by the minor, studied by a team of doctors and an independent psychiatrist or psychologist, and they must have parental consent before they kill the child. Which is what they're doing in Belgium. And meanwhile, as if in Belgium they hadn't lost their mind completely, let's come back to Seattle, where a task force was formed in Seattle to fight the heroin epidemic. Well, they've come out with their recommendations. They recommend the opening of public supervised sites where the addicts can shoot up heroin. They were formed to help fight the heroin epidemic. Their recommendation is to give them heroin and a place to shoot it up. The recommendation is supported by the Seattle mayor, Ed Murray. What's that? And Target? Oh. Let's get back here. The mayor of Seattle says, well, if it can be done in a way that reduces the negative impacts on neighborhoods, I'm all for it. We're going to establish two safe spaces, and here's what they're going to call them, folks. Community health engagement locations. Did you get that? That's where you go to shoot up heroin. A community health engagement location. Am I living in the Soviet Union? Yeah, like Planned Parenthood. Am I in a George Orwell novel? Is this 1984? Let's all go down to the community health engagement location. You'd think you'd go there to get healthy. Hey, maybe do some jumping jacks. No, it's a place to shoot up heroin with the mayor, or at least in front of the mayor. And the mayor doesn't mind as long as you're not in his neighborhood, littering his gutters with dirty needles. He's fine with you killing yourself. He just doesn't want to have to clean up after you. And that is more evidence that godlessness will drive you insane. That's the show. I'm Doug McBurney. Thank you. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.